Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, and thank you for downloading this week's podcast of The Best of The Breakfast Show with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, luscious leading man Max Irons waxes lyrical about the second series of the spy thriller Condor on Sky One. The miracle author of the medical world, Adam Kay, curates stories from a selection of well-known faces in his book, Dear NHS, 100 Stories to Say Thank You, which is already at number one in the Sunday Times bestsellers list. Plus, the hilarious Stephen Mangan tells us about his ninth year presenting the British Academy Television Craft Awards and how it's all going to work virtually. All of that and loads more still to come. Now, Dapper Dave, tell us who the first guest is.
Russian secret agents and biological warfare are all in a day's work for our next guest. Series 2 of the smash hit Condor returns to Sky One tomorrow night at 9 p.m. So please welcome its chiseled and charming leading man that's as far from any old iron as you can get. It's the brilliant Max Irons.
Good morning, Max.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Very well, Maxie. Max, 34, born in Camden, North London. He's the son of the acting royalty Jeremy Irons and Sinead Cusack. So there you go. We get lots of nice texts about your show whenever we mention it, by the way, Max. Here we go.
Julie. Oh, is that true?
Yeah, Julie in Benbow says, we've watched all of the series of Condor. Another Sky gem. Love you guys. All right, so lots of love for the show. That one of many. The Frothy Coverman works on our show, Maxie, and I haven't seen Condor because you can't see everything all the time, can you? But just from what I'm hearing now, you know, your appearance on the show is doing its job because I want to watch it. So season one, episode one, everybody dies. Apart from you.
Everybody dies. And then I do a lot of running away from said gunfire.
Right, so your character, he's a reluctant sort of cyber tech genius, is that right?
Yeah, he's a young CIA analyst.
Right.
Who's working for a secret office of the CIA, and what his job is to make the programs that are used in surveillance. However, he's young and he's a bit of an idealist, and he begins to question how his technology is being used. And then, as you say, somebody comes into his office and kills every one of his co-workers.
Right.
He goes on the run and goes about getting to the bottom of whether it's CIA involved or a external terrorist organization. It's all that sort of thing.
We talk to people who've worked on Call the Midwife for like 100 years or Holby City, and just by working around a particular subject, even as an actor, you begin to sort of pick up tips. We've talked to many Call the Midwife ladies, and they've said, you know, if called upon in an emergency birthing situation, they think they might have learned enough about childbirth, you know, by working on Call the Midwife, they could be of some use. Not how, you know, how much is the use, the jury's still out, but is it the same for you around tech, around coding?
What, did I just picked up coding very quickly? No, absolutely not.
Okay.
Also, if I was called upon to be any sort of agent, I don't know. There was a day when I arrived in Canada to begin shooting, and I got sent to a shooting range.
Yeah.
And there was a guy who looked like a sort of, you know, grizzled U.S. Marine. His neck was about as thick as my thigh. And he gave me this submachine gun with a, you know, silencer and a scope on top of it. And I just started sweating and shaking profusely. So I'd be hopeless.
All right. So you were firing live rounds there as part of the research for the job.
That's it. And I was standing next to the young girl, Leem Lubani, who plays our assassin in our show, and she was cool as a cucumber, so it was not a good day for the English.
All right, but it's season two, you know, you're all in now. How has that changed for you? Are you more au fait with everything that could go on in the world of espionage?
Well, I think Joe, you know, when you come across him at the beginning, he's a young, idealistic, principled, slightly naive fella.
Yeah.
You know, in the beginning of episode one, somebody asked him, you know, would you kill one person to avoid the death of five people later down the road?
Right.
And he answers no, because the minute you get involved in that negotiation, you're part of the problem. But then he, you know, meets the real world, and you know, you meet the world on the world's terms and not your terms, and he finds that, in fact, you've got to do a bad thing often to avert a worse thing later. So
yep.
When you meet him in season two, he's been on the run from the CIA, but he's more mature, and he understands what needs to be done to protect
the
people.
Nice sell. That's a nice sell. Because, again, you know, I'm all in now. And so you...
Oh, well, that's very good, because 2 minutes ago, one of your colleagues said to me, you're going to have to summon the show up. And no, I'm awful at that, so I'm glad it was
No, you've time. Nailed it. Mm. I mean, it's all about asking the right questions, of course. I mean, I'm not going to downplay my own part in this conversation. So if you look at a footballer, season one, right? So you say they just made the Liverpool first team, 18 years old, 19 years old, okay. And they look like a kid, all right? And then you have the season break and they come back, you know, one season in, and they look different. How differently have you changed physically from season one of this to season two? Do you look more the part now? Are you more sort of superhero than techie geek?
No, it's still techie geek. A lot of running, a lot of hiding in bushes.
Right.
You know, strategical hiding in bushes, obviously.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
But no, you're still the same analyst.
Do you actually hide in bushes?
I do on several occasions. Also under desks, you know, all sorts of things.
It's so funny, isn't it? Because we don't hide enough as grown-ups. We've got to hide more, haven't we?
Yeah, I think hiding is often the solution to modern problems. Just hide.
We were talking earlier on about the new Netflix game show, Floor is Lava. Have you heard about that?
No.
You know that game, Floor is Lava, as a kid, and you're not allowed to touch the floor because it's lava? Do you know that? Do you know that one?
I do know that one, yeah.
Right, well,
jumping on the sofa.
They've made a multi-billion-dollar game show, but apparently it's really popular, called Floor is Lava. And it's not even the Floor is Lava. It's just like notes from a meeting. Floor is Lava. Simple as that. Yeah.
Well, they're onto something over there.
They are onto something.
Yeah, wow.
Max,
yeah.
Anything else you want to say about your show? Because we've all got to watch it now. We're all on board. Series 2 starts tomorrow, 9 p.m. Sky 1, Condor. Why wouldn't you want to watch it? You must have done. Did you watch the original movie with Robert Redford?
Of course. In fact, we on the first day of shooting, the night before, they held a special screening, which of course I didn't go to, because there's Robert Redford, the most charismatic, handsome, detailed actor on earth, and then everyone watches it, oohs and ahs at how great he is, and then the following day you turn up to set and everyone's like, who's this little Englishman? Hopeless. No way. I thought about banning the referral to Robert Redford on set.
Wow. And but that's a funny thing to do, though. The night before, because everybody could have had their own version of it set in their mind, couldn't they? I mean, show 6 weeks before. The night before you start shooting, that could have gone either way. That could have gone horribly wrong.
I know. Cruel and unusual punishment, I think, for unknown crime.
You didn't watch it then, but you have watched it since or before?
I've watched it a couple of times.
Before?
But, before. But, you know, as an actor, it's not particularly useful, I don't think, to linger on other people's performances. It can give you all sorts of neuroses and distract you from what you're doing. And, you know, our show is set in a different time with a different set of sort of political and economic variables. And you know, you've got to look at the original, take it in, appreciate it and move on.
Is there a season 3 already slated? Is it in the bag? Or do we have to see how season 2 pans out?
I think we've got to see how season 2 does.
All right, mate. Well, it's lovely to talk to you. Whereabouts are you in the world?
I'm in northwest London, Willesden.
All right.
At the moment.
Well, give my love to your dad and well done. And we'll give it loads of plugs this week, your show.
Oh, thank you very much, Chris. Nice to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
A socially distanced studio, virtual acceptance speeches and celebs dialing in to present awards. Lockdown will not stop the celebration of television. He's hosting the British Academy Television Craft Awards for the 9th time tonight, so please welcome the craftiest of them all. It's the marvellous Stephen Mangan.
Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, my friend?
I'm terrific, thank you.
So if people aren't aware of the difference between the BAFTAs and the Television Craft Awards, can you tell them what that might be, please?
Yes, a few years ago, because the BAFTA Television Awards were lasting about 4.5 days, they decided to split them into two separate evenings. One evening is for programmes, best comedy, best drama, etc., and the on-screen talent.
Yeah.
And then the other awards, which are tonight, the BAFTA Craft Awards, the people who actually make the programmes happen. So the writers, the directors, makeup, costume, all those people, editors, that sort of thing. So that's what we're handing out tonight.
Right, now, it says in the intro, you are hosting the awards for the 9th time. That's not the 9th time the awards have happened. This is the 9th time you've actually hosted them. So they must like you, Steve.
Yeah, I don't... I mean, obviously, you've done lots of this sort of stuff. It's the award shows have a pretty... kind of a settled format nowadays, where the host gets up and he or her does 10 minutes of chat, and if you're Ricky Gervais at the Golden Globes, you insult everyone in front of you, and to great hilarity. But I obviously can't do that to makeup artists and costume designers, so I take the mickey out of myself. And then we hand out the awards. But that format is out the window this year because we can't all group together, obviously. So it's been a chance to try something a bit different. So I put some sketches in,
yes.
I sing a song. There's all sorts of, you know, trickery with special effects and a bit of makeup and costume. And I can, you know, because we've already filmed it all. So, yeah, it was fun. It was good to sort of do something a bit different.
When you say filmed it all, is it all in the can? Is it done and dusted?
Yeah, I mean, all my stuff is, unless I'm very much mistaken and I've got a heavy evening ahead of me. We filmed it all. Obviously, I had no idea who the winners were. I say, and the nominees are, then they show the nominee packages and then they announce the winner and it'll be a surprise to everyone this evening.
Right, big names. Chernobyl, The Crown, Fleabag, yes?
Yeah, I mean, it's been quite a year, hasn't it? They're the big shows that have got loads and loads of awards. I think, you know, there's been some, you know, Chernobyl was, I think, one of the best television series I've ever seen. The Crown continues to be a sort of success juggernaut.
Yeah.
And I think they've just announced another series of that. And then Fleabag has, you know, blown everyone away again with sexy priests. Andrew Scott.
You're right. I mean, you speak the truth. It's as simple as that. Yeah. Hosting an award show is a very, very strange thing, isn't it, Stephen?
It really is. I mean, I remember Stephen Fry once saying it left him, always left him depressed afterwards. You know, he found it really... And it, because no one's there to see you as the host. You know, everyone in the room is there because they're nominated or they're on a show that's nominated. And they're all very excited to see if they win. And obviously, as the evening goes on, the room fills up with more and more people who've lost and who've had a bit to drink and want to start chatting. And, you know, if you do your job well as a host, you sort of blend into the background after a while because it's not about you. It's about the people who win. So it is a really disconcerting evening, but
so
I
true.
Keep coming back for some reason.
It's so true. You describe it perfectly. It makes me feel sick when you describe it. Because the whole thing, you know, whether it's the Brits is the one I did the most, I suppose, but that whole thing about not eating all day, and all you can smell is food, because the catering's amazing. You can't eat all day. And then when you finally do get off stage, you're gagging for a drink. But because you've not eaten all day, you get drunk after a half a shandy and you just have to be wheeled out and go home and you miss out on everything. And the thing about you know, what happens to you on stage is the opposite of what you're giving out awards for. So what you're giving out awards for are things that, by definition, get better the more episodes are broadcast of them. They get more exciting, you know, amazing plots. Comedy shows get funnier. You're experiencing the opposite of that. You are losing the room minute by minute. When Stephen says, you know, everybody gets there and the vast majority of people are in the mix at the beginning and then one award goes, so you lose, you know, 17% of them, and the next one goes down, and in the end, nobody cares about anything apart from the one person or the last four people who are nominated for the last award. And you go from being this host, which gets a massive round of applause at the beginning of the night, to be basically being head of housekeeping towards the end of the night.
And also, I mean, if you go to America, I've been to New York to hand out some legal awards, and what they do over there is once their award has come up, win, lose, or draw, they go home.
Yeah, of course they do.
So by the end of the evening, there's four tables left out of 100 for the last award. And you know that three quarters of them are going to hate you for making you wait right till the end of the evening to tell them that they've lost.
Yeah, and then they walk off the wrong way and they don't pose for the one photograph they've got a photo. And you go, look, I don't even want to be here anymore. Just please do this. And what have you been watching in lockdown? What have you been enjoying?
I enjoyed some of those Netflix documentaries. I enjoyed The Tiger King. I thought that was gobsmacking and weird and full of horrible people, but I just couldn't stop watching it.
Right.
I've listened to a lot of podcasts, actually. Yeah. I've listened to a thing called West Cork, a sort of true crime thing about a murder in Ireland, which has made me double lock the doors every time I go to bed. What else have I watched? I mean, not any sport, obviously. And I'm so busy trying to homeschool three children that by the time it gets to 9 o'clock most nights, I go to bed, to be honest.
Yeah, and do you have now a renewed respect and worship of teachers?
All teachers should have their pay doubled immediately. That's all I'm saying.
I agree.
If I was allowed to, I would go out. I mean, I'm clapping teachers as much as anyone else on those Thursday evenings. You know, they are heroes. Yeah. As soon as they get back to work, I think there'll be tears of joy when I bring my children back into school again.
Well, summer holidays just about to kick in, so that'll be September. Anyway, Stephen, thanks so much for being here. Lovely to talk to you again.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Lockdown hasn't stopped our next guest. He's performing exclusive drive-in shows for NHS staff this weekend and has curated the new book, Dear NHS 100 Stories to Say Thank You, that's out now. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the marvel of modern medicine and mirth that is the mega-selling juggernaut, Adam Kay.
Morning, Adam!
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for your book. All right, so I know I've written a few words in it. Who else has written stories and their appreciation, their thank you letters? They're love letters to the NHS, and what kind of things have they been saying, Adam?
Yeah, who hasn't written for it? So this is a charity book. Every single drop of money goes to NHS Charities Together and the Lullaby Trust, who supports families bereaved of babies and young children. Who hasn't written for it? Everyone's written for it. Paul McCartney's written for it. Michael Palin's written for it. Trevor McDonald's written for it. Kathy Burke's written for it. Chris Evans has written for it.
Sorry.
Amelia Clarke, Emma Watson. It's a pretty good cast list.
Okay, now this was non-judgmental. You requested some words from them, and these words came in. And did you print them? Are they all verbatim as they were? Any editing going on? Any rewrites?
Unedited. I wanted this to be a true, personal, honest love letter to the NHS.
Right.
From 100 amazing people. And so, you know, because I wrote you a letter, I said, write anything, any length about you, about anyone, as long as it's personal. And people sent in some amazing writing. I'm not just proud of the people who've contributed. I'm hugely proud of what they've written. I think it's a really special little book. And you know, we corrected any spelling mistakes to spare blushes, Chris.
Right.
But other than that, no, we didn't change any of the words.
Okay, so give us a sense of some of the sentiment that's in there, and from who.
Oh, goodness me. I think that the overall feeling is one of love and gratitude, and the sense that whoever you are, however many trillions of records you've sold, you're still just a human being who has personally and whose family's relied on the NHS. So the book starts with an extraordinary story from Graham Norton, who'd just come to London as a drama student in the late 90s and was on his way back on a night out. And Graham got stabbed, and he got really, really badly stabbed, and he lost half of his blood volume and was going from door to door, knocking on doors, asking people to call an ambulance for him. And he gets to the hospital and asks the nurse, am I going to die? And the nurse pauses before she answers, and he says in that moment his flesh hugged his bones. And I think you can't read and not feel your own flesh hug your bones, but obviously and thankfully he survived. He was patched up, like so many of us are, by the NHS. And he talks about it being the safety net that scooped him up as a new arrival in this country. And there are so many stories of gratitude to, like, Dawn French talking so powerfully about the last days of her mum in Derriford Hospital and remembering the names of the staff who looked after her. Amelia Clarke was extremely unwell, having had brain aneurysms. And she talks so powerfully about that, being a hospital inpatient for a long time. And doesn't just mention the doctors and the nurses who often get the headline billing. It's about the cleaners and the phlebotomists who took the blood and the people who prepared the fish pie for her and the porters, and reminding us that the whole NHS is this amazing jigsaw of hundreds of different professions going beyond the call of duty.
It's interesting sort of hearing you being interviewed about this right now. I can hear a sort of consistent smile in your voice. That isn't always the case, but I can feel the sort of sense of pride, joy, welcome, surprise or confirmation, perhaps?
I'm so hugely proud of this book. I just think it's, like you said at the top, it's a love letter. And it is really surprising because, as you say, I ask people, I gave people a blank check. And so Jimmy Carr sent in something. And I knew what Jimmy Carr was going to write. He was going to write something funny because he's Jimmy Carr. But he doesn't. He writes hugely emotively about the death of his mum. And I think it's a very surprising book. And there's poetry in there from people like Pam Ayres and Benjamin Zephaniah and Kate Tempest. And there are recipes in there. I asked Jamie Oliver to contribute to the book, and Jamie Oliver contributed to the book by not just writing about his love for the NHS, but being very practical and giving us recipes for scones and for veggie jelly to cook for the NHS people in our lives.
Well, let's stick with the foodie theme, because it's very Chicken Soup for the Soul-y, you know, the compilation of the stories, and not dissimilar in length, you know. And as we know, there have been hundreds and hundreds editions now of Chicken Soup for the Soul, and some people have never heard of Chicken Soup for the Soul. Sold billions of books. Could this be the first of many as far as the NHS is concerned?
Oh, I'm just going to get this one out of the way first, and then we'll see. But I mean, there are certainly a lot of books about the NHS, and I just wanted this one to be different in that it was directly saying thank you to the staff, and also saying thank you in a very practical way, by hopefully raising an absolute ton of money for charity.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is a fantastic read. I know that pre-sales are already pretty spectacular. You might even knock yourself off the top with this one.
I'd be delighted to.
I know, edited by Adam Kay, it's out now on all formats. So you can get the physical book, you can get audio book, e-book. And is that a Banksy on the front I'm looking at, Adam?
It is a Banksy on the front, yeah.
Wow, that is so cool. How did you get that to happen?
You just shine a light with a big B in it into the sky, and he sends you a piece of artwork.
Do you know what? I think that might be true. Let's just leave that there. Adam, I love you to death. Thanks so much. And we'll plug your book for a good few days yet. Well done.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Ta-da.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We've heard from three tremendous guests already, but there's still so much more super stuff still to come, including Sky Sports, Sky F1's David Crofty Croft taking a pit stop to get us all excited about the Hungarian Grand Prix. And we chat to Sara de Jong and Lucy Moxie, the winners of the 500 Words Black Lives Matter competition, and hear their wonderful writing read by two acting superstars, Mark Strong and Nicole Kidman. All of that and more still to come, so let's get right back to it. Dapper Dave, who's next?
The return of Formula One certainly hasn't disappointed, and we're hungry for more. Or should that be Hungarian for more?
Hey!
Yes, you can watch all remaining races, including this weekend's Hungarian Grand Prix, live and exclusive on Sky Sports F1. So please welcome the man that brings it all to life. It's the unforgettable David Croft.
Well, you know, usually unforgettable. We're so sorry about that, Crofty.
Shocking.
It is absolutely sure. Have you ever forgotten a guest? You can't forget a guest, can you?
No, but your show tends to... You let it breathe in the morning, and occasionally you overrun.
That is a very kind way of putting it. In fact, you couldn't have put it any kinder. So let's go back to Austria, first of all. Austria Part 2, Sunday just gone. It's a race of two halves. First half of the tale is it was as dull as ditch water, but the upside is, the positive is, that you were right and Lewis came steaming back. So as long as Crofty ends up being right, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely, yeah, we can forget what happened in the middle. There was you poo-pooing my idea that Lewis Hamilton would bounce back, but that was probably the greatest qualifying lap that Lewis Hamilton's ever put in. 1.2 seconds clear of his nearest rival.
Unbelievable.
And an average speed. I mean, Chris, I know you're a good driver, but imagine torrential rain, standing water, and an average speed of 121 miles an hour.
I know.
We would struggle to match that.
I mean, he even surprised himself, because I watched the post-qualifying interview and he sort of couldn't believe it. And he wasn't sort of being overpleased with himself. He just genuinely was in shock.
Yeah, he was probably still very much in the zone as well. Mm. And took some time on Saturday night to recover from it. But you don't get any points on the Saturday, you get points on the Sunday, and he absolutely dominated the race as well. I think we've got a really good title scrap on our hands this year between Valtteri Bottas, the Mercedes should be confirming for at least another couple of years this weekend, and Lewis Hamilton. The Mercedes is the class car, they're the two class drivers. And whilst Red Bull will fancy their chances this weekend, I can't see anything but a Mercedes victory. And that's not surprising, given how they dominated in testing all those months ago.
I thought Charles Leclerc was very gracious in immediately apologising to his teammate that he completely fudged the whole thing up for the Scuderia on Sunday.
Yeah, he was, and that's to his credit, but he shouldn't have been there trying to go down the inside of the bed in the first place.
No.
And he's got to learn. He can't keep doing that. I mean, we go to the Hungaro Ring, where on the first lap last year, he tangled with Valtteri Bottas. On the first lap the year before, he had a crash with the two Force Indias. You know, he's a very talented man, Charles Leclerc, but he is. It's a case of wrong place, wrong time a lot with that man, considering the money he's paid and the responsibility that he's got to go out and perform for Ferrari. But they're fit in the championship. They're in a proper mess. And they might as well just write off this season. And I don't say that lightly, because we want Ferrari to do well and to provide a challenge. But you just can't see where they're going to improve from. And, you know, they rushed in a load of upgrades, aero upgrades last week, and didn't get a chance to run them. You know, I ran two laps of the track in Hungary last week, and last night, I should say, and James
did,
George Russell.
Did
you? I'm no Sebastian Vettel. Yeah, I did. I did. It was blooming hilly and hot, it was. But I joked to George Russell as I ran past, but, you know, I'm no Sebastian Vettel, but at least I was on lap two.
Yeah, okay. Oh, good. So from the garages to Sky's Sports Sky F1's very own Garage Easters, in your bubble, what is life like in the bubble? Did you nip home in between Austria or Austria and Hungary?
We got on a bus on Monday morning, and we drove to Budapest, where we have been locked down. I've just had 30 seconds out in the fresh air, which is the first 30 seconds I've had in the fresh air since about 6 o'clock last night. We've been in proper lockdown, guys. The Hungarian government have said, if we're caught on the streets, anyone from Formula One, we face a €15,000 fine and possible imprisonment as well.
Oh dear.
So we can go hotel to track and track to hotel. That's it. We are being kept in chains. Well, metaphorically.
All right. And what about, tell us about the mask sheet, because I wore a mask to work for the first time yesterday because I thought it was about time. I did my bit and sent out the right signals. And I got a lovely rainbow mask on, and it's from Noah's Scrubs collection. And I see that, because you start noticing things, don't you? So Red Bull changed their mask from week one to week two. They were quite funky week one, but they were quite a bit cooler and less funky week two. Any other mask news? What about your mask news? The team's mask.
We are just using standard issue medical masks.
Right.
And it does take a bit of getting used to be fair, but after a couple of days, it just becomes very much commonplace. But I love the way the teams have all kind of produced their own masks. I think the Ferrari one looks proper Dick Turpin spec. It really does. And McLaren have been wearing their own masks from the start. We'll continue to do that. The masks might come off for Silverstone, because we are in a bubble. We are all being tested every 5 days. And the masks may disappear by the time we get to Silverstone. But do you know what? We're getting used to them now. Everyone's wearing them when they go shopping and when they go outside.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't Formula One be wearing them as well?
30 seconds to whet our appetite for the Hungaro Ring. Come on.
Okay, Hungaro Ring. Lewis Hamilton could break more records or equal more records this weekend. If he wins, it'll be the eighth time he wins in Budapest, and he'll match Michael Schumacher's record for the most wins at a single track. Schumacher did it at Manicor. Valtteri Bottas has been on the podium only once as a Mercedes driver. He really needs to up his game around here. Max Verstappen is a recent winner. And don't go anywhere until the last lap, because Lando Norris, last lap Lando, is proving an absolute sensation in 2020. He went and gained three places on the last two laps last week. He got the podium place in Austria week one on the last lap. He leaves it late, but it's spectacular when he arrives.
Last lap, Lando. I love that. All right, Crofty, I promise, please come on again. I'm so sorry we forgot. I think we forgot about you because we didn't forget about you, and we sort of knew you wouldn't mind. Does that get me out of it at all? No, you never mind. Never mind that you never mind. All right, brilliant. Live from Hungary for Sky Sports, Sky F1. Back this weekend with the Hungarian Grand Prix, David Croft.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
OK, so now we are very proud to announce the winners of the first ever Pop-Up 500 Words. 500 Words, Black Lives Matter. 3 weeks start to finish, unbelievable. Michael Underwood now has the winner of the 5 to 9 year olds.
That's right, the 5 to 9 category. Before I reveal who the overall winner of this category is, I thought we should get into what the judges thought, their final sum ups of this winning story. So, Angelica?
Okay, yes, Mallory Blackman said this is a real gem of a story and is deeply, deeply rooted in reality. The last sentence is one of the best closes I've ever read. Francesca Simon, well done. Your story is sensational. Whilst it read like an essay, it created an engaging and amazing story. Then we went to Charlie Higson. Of all the stories we've read, this remained with me for a long time. It's incredibly memorable and is such an important piece of writing. And finally, Frank Cottrell Boyce, easily and by far the most accomplished piece of work in this category. A joy to read.
So, which piece of writing are we talking about? I can tell you that the winner of 500 words, Black Lives Matter in the 5 to 9 category is Sarah de Jong with I Feel Out of Control!
Woo!
And I believe Sarah is on the line now. Good morning, Sarah!
Good morning!
Woo! Hey, how do you feel?
I feel excited and crazy.
Excited and crazy.
You go crazy, Sarah. You go crazy. Listen, your story was amazing. I mean, and like Mallory said, the last sentence was so poignant. Just tell us a bit, where did you get your inspiration from?
I got my inspiration from one of my mum's friends that lives in Minneapolis, and she sent lots of photos of where George Floyd died, and one of the photos was a mural, and I really liked the mural, so I chose to base the story on that.
I mean, that is incredible.
It's absolutely amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And did you find it difficult to write the story? Did it take you a long time?
I found it quite difficult.
Maybe because it was difficult, that's why you were able to be so eloquent with it and be able to put your thoughts out there. Do you think?
Yeah.
So how did your friends feel when they found out that you were a finalist? I mean, did you get loads of phone calls? Did family get in touch? What was the reaction?
Lots of my friends felt quite happy. Some of them felt jealous.
Oh. Well, that'll always happen.
Yeah, it doesn't change when you get older.
So. Don't let that bother you. It's a life lesson. It's a life lesson, Sarah. But do you know what? I'm sure you were strong through it. And look now, how are they going to feel? You are the winner in your category, which is incredible.
Yep.
Yep, I love it. Listen, thank you so much. We are blown away by what you do. We've got some fantastic things lined up for you as well. You're going to be coming down here to Virgin Radio, spending time with the team. We're going to be taking you out. We're going to be working out exactly what we can do once these lockdown rules have relaxed. But we know it's going to be an amazing time for you. And of course, your story is going to appear in the 500 Words Black Lives Matter book as well. All of that and so much more.
Cool.
It is cool. That's
it's
exactly
so
what
cool.
It is. Sarah, have a great day. We'll see you as soon as we possibly can. Congratulations. And now we have your story one more time on the actual radio, read by Mark Strong.
I Feel Out of Control by Sarah de Jong. George Floyd was killed in Minneapolis. A police officer knelt on his neck until he died. George Floyd was black. The police officer is white. People are marching to demand that it does not happen again. They are marching against police cruelty and against racism. I feel out of control. I'm so angry and sad. When I feel like this, I like to draw pictures. I find that it helps me to feel better. But today was different. I took my bucket of chalk and headed outside to start drawing on the sidewalk. I began writing George Floyd's name in big yellow letters when my neighbour Mohammed walked by. "I'm angry too," he said. He picked up a piece of chalk and started drawing figures of the protesters inside my bubble letters. While Mohammed drew, he shared his own stories of racism. My classmate Ping walked by. "I can't believe this happened," he said, and grabbing a piece of chalk, started drawing. Ping explained how the discrimination he and his family face has gotten worse with COVID-19. "I'm not a virus, you know," he said, as he drew a large sunflower onto the sidewalk. Mohammed and I nodded. "We know." My neighbour Anna came by. Anna arrived in the UK some 20 years ago from Poland. "The world has become very scary," she said, as she bent down and made a summer sky with sweeps of blue and white chalk. "Some people broke all the windows at my son's grocery shop because of Brexit and wrote 'Go home' across the door," she finally whispered. Mohammed patted her hand. "Kwame, my best friend from next door, came over carrying a list of people's names who also faced police unkindness. He took a piece of chalk and began writing their names inside Ping's sunflower. Terence Crutcher was killed by police, even though he had no gun and was no threat," Kwame explained, as he signed his name to the sidewalk. "Mr. Crutcher's death led to protests in Tulsa. Eric Garner died after being placed in a strangling hold by a police officer. He died because he couldn't breathe, just like George Floyd," Kwame said quietly. "Breonna Taylor was shot by police while standing in her own apartment," Kwame wrote her name. "Freddie Gray died in the back of a police van. He broke his neck," Kwame carefully added Gray's name. "Together, Mohammed, Ping, Anna, Kwame and I drew, at the center of our drawing, a picture of George Floyd. I drew the head, while Ping drew the eyes and nose. Kwame drew the ears and mouth, Anna the hair, and Mohammed the upper body. I proudly looked at the drawing we made. I knew that tonight's rain would likely wash away our drawing. And I knew that tomorrow morning I would likely wake up feeling again out of control and needing to draw. But for today, I said softly to myself, I can breathe now."
You've been listening to the acting extraordinaire Mark Strong reading the winning 500 words Black Lives Matter story, I Feel Out of Control, by 9-year-old Sarah.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Right, let's have our second winner. Welcome to all the finalists this week. You are all winners, but we have the best in show, if you like, for the 10 to 13-year-olds. Who's going to lead the charge?
Yes, I'm sure I go in. I'm going to go in for this one. So we have the overall winner for 500 words Black Lives Matter in the 10 to 13 category. But before we get to the announcement, we're going to find out exactly what the judges thought about this story.
Of the winning story, the judges said, this was Malamud Blackman. "What an incredible story. There are so many themes of the movement woven in subtly. The use of the narrator is so, so clever." Francesca Simon, "I adore the use and repetition of the refrain, the first line over and over again. It's outstanding." Charlie Higson, "We are fortunate to gain a connection with both children. It's so powerful and moving and introduces the reader to a different points of view." Frank Cottrell Boyce, "The way you planted the toy gun so unassumingly and then suddenly make it the main focal point of the story is phenomenal. Little clue there. You showed such control of the piece and dealt with the issue at hand remarkably."
So, the winner of 500 words Black Lives Matter in the 10 to 13 category is Lucy Moxie! And Lucy's on the line right now. Good morning, Lucy. Congratulations. How are you feeling?
I'm very shocked because there's so many good stories. Aww. And I didn't know that I was going to win.
Honestly, your story, Christopher Was Quiet in School Today, is so, so emotional. I don't know. I need to know from you, where did you get your inspiration? Where did you get the idea from this story?
Well, with like the current situation going on, I just thought that the best way to like share what's going on and try to change it is with a story.
Yeah, I thought it was really clever because you showed so much empathy in it, Lucy, and I liked that it had two different perspectives. How do you feel about everything?
There's 5 days and there's 500 words, so if there's 100 words a day and a different thing happens every day, I just thought that can show what actually happens in real life.
Wow. So you broke it down like that. I would never have thought of that.
No, that's so smart. That is so, so smart, Lucy.
Really,
and you can, see that within your story, which is sort of a structure of a poem, actually, isn't it? The way that it's done. But it's beautiful. And that explanation actually clears it up now. Yeah. I totally see
another
what you were doing.
Soul.
I know. Yeah. It's absolutely incredible.
Lucy, why did you want to enter the competition?
Well, it was actually my school that gave the children the details of this competition. And I just thought it was a fun way to just, like, write a story and share it with people. And I didn't think that I would get this far.
It's amazing. Should we give your school a shout-out? Go and give your school a shout-out for us. Who are they?
Archbishop Cranmer.
Oh, well, listen, thank you very much to your school. Amazing. And thank you to all the schools, actually, that showed support throughout this competition, because that's what it's really about, is spreading the word and spreading the message. But Lucy, oh, listen, we have got someone now...
It's Mega.
..to read out your story.
Mega.
And you know what? We thought we need somebody of the kind of quality that Lucy Moxie deserves. Well, where do we go for Lucy Moxie quality, Lucy? We go to the Hollywood A-list. So, Lucy, reading out your story, Christopher was quiet in school today, is the wonderful, the amazing, the incredible Nicole Kidman.
Are you ready, Lucy?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. This is actual Nicole Kidman.
Christopher was quiet in school today by Lucy Moxie. Christopher was quiet in school today. When I asked him why, he told me he was late home because him and his mum were stopped by the security guard in the grocery store. I remember when that guy helped me when my bike had a flat tire. So he obviously had a good reason to do what he did. He's a good man. After lunch, we did science. I hate science. It's so hard. But Christopher loves it. I have no idea why, but he's very good at it. He's very smart. Christopher was quiet in school today. When I asked him why, he told me his mum still hadn't found a job. I remember months ago, Chris said his mum was looking for a job. I don't know why I expected she would have found one by now. My mum found a job in only a few weeks. He was quite sad about it, so we played his favourite game at recess. He'd brought his toy gun into school. He's not allowed, but I didn't tell. That game seemed to cheer him up a bit. We had so much fun. But for some reason, my mum wouldn't let him come over after school. Christopher was quiet in school today. When I asked him why, he said he and his older brother had had the talk. I don't know what that means, so I asked him. He said that boys with brown skin had to be told what to do when a cop approached them. Why, though? Police are there to protect us. Doesn't he understand that? Police are our friends. Chris told me he'd heard his parents say that there were guns in our area, whatever that means. Then we played soccer. It was super fun. I like soccer. Christopher was quiet in school today. When I asked him why, he said he was watching the news and his dad told him to go out the room. But he peeked at it anyway. He saw riots and police signs that said BLM. What's BLM? Why was Chris watching the news anyway? It's boring. I never watch the news. And why would Chris's dad tell him to go out the room? There's nothing to hide, like I said. It's boring anyways. At lunchtime, we played tag. I was it. But when I went home, my mum told me I couldn't hang out with Chris anymore. I was super sad about it. What did Chris ever do wrong? Christopher was not in school today. He might have caught the bug, I thought. It's spreading. The teachers called us into assembly. Our teacher was crying. She told us Chris is not coming to school today, that he's never coming to school ever again, whatever that means. She said the police had thought the toy gun he had was real. I don't understand. I'm scared. I wish Chris were here so I could ask him what this is all about.
That was the one and only Nicole Kidman reading the winning 500 words Black Lives Matter story, Christopher Was Quiet in School Today, by 11-year-old Lucy.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Well, that's it. Thank you so much for listening to this week's podcast. If you'd like to listen to all of the talented finalists, then download our 500 words Black Lives Matter podcast special.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.